Going Linux, episode 331, Whole Disk Cloning on Linux. Welcome to the Going Linux podcast. I'm your host, Larry Bushy.
And I'm your co-host, Bill.
Whether you are new to Linux, upgrading from Windows to Linux, or just thinking about moving to Linux, this podcast will provide you with valuable information and advice that will help you in going Linux.
We hope that you find this and all our episodes helpful in learning about Linux and open source applications and using them to get things done.
In today's episode, Whole Disk Cloning on Linux. So, Bill, here we are again, recording another episode. Imagine that.
Yeah, imagine that. And we have guests today that two sleeping dogs over here snoring, so you might hear some background as they're off in dreamland.
Okay, well, maybe you can hold the microphone up to them a little bit and they can speak up or snore up or whatever, you know, whatever. Yeah, anyway, we'll see if they even come through. Probably not.
So how's your book doing?
We've got a few sales, and surprisingly, the paperback version is equally popular to the ebook version. I actually thought the ebook version would be a little more popular, but
bought the paperback.
Yeah, well, thank you for that. Both versions are doing well, and I'm really pleased. That's for sure. I think we've earned what, like $4.50 or something. Yeah, whatever it is.
So it's not millions of copies yet?
Not millions of copies, no. Maybe tens of copies? 20? It's over 20 copies, so.
Okay.
I'm not disappointed with that. That's great. Thank you to everyone who has purchased it. And if you listen to this podcast, great. If you don't, you won't hear this, but thank you anyway.
Well, that's one way to cover all the bases. Okay.
Yeah.
We've plugged the book. By the way, I am so glad I'm not in Florida right now. Those poor guys down there are getting hammered.
Yes, yes. This is September 10th. We are recording this episode, and
yes,
it's about ready to hit the mainland of Florida, and this is Hurricane Irma, I think is the name.
Yeah, Irma.
That we're talking about, and there's another one hot on its heels. Hopefully it doesn't hit the same location, because that would be absolutely devastating.
Yeah, so our thoughts are with you guys.
Absolutely.
That thing's huge. And really, I have some friends in Florida, and I'm really concerned about them. I hope they fled.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, we want you guys to be safe down there. Yeah. So moving on from the current events. In episode 307, we talked about today's backup strategies. These are great for making sure that you don't lose any of your data, like I've done a lot. But sometimes you just want to make an exact clone of your whole hard drive. And that is kind of a handy thing to have. One goes down, pop another one in, and you're good to go.
Yep, absolutely. And thanks to listener Ken for suggesting this, among other topics. And certainly having a recent copy of your entire disk drive is a great way to get a backup, and also to get your computer back up and running if something completely disastrous happens to your computer. Removing the bad drive, replacing it with the cloned backup, restoring any more recently created or edited files from your file-based backups, and you're back in business.
You know, that's great if you have a removable hard drive.
Oh, yeah.
But if you have one of the newer computers with solid-state storage on a circuit board, you might not be able to easily swap drives. In that case, we'll need our backup software to be able to restore the whole disk image to the original SSD.
Right. And there are a number of programs out there that give you that ability to make a perfect clone, bit-for-bit clone of your hard drive, and then restore it back to that same hard drive or a different one. And oftentimes you can just, if you have got a removable drive, just make a copy if the drive is the same size, just make a backup copy over to the second drive. And because it's bit for bit copy, you can just swap it in and out with the original drive, and it will work as though it were the original drive. So it's really a handy way to make a safe backup that gets you up and running quickly. We're going to talk about four programs in a little bit of depth. There's a fifth one that people may have heard of, especially if you come from the Windows world. In Windows, for a long, long time, there was a program called Ghost that did just this. It was something that was provided by the Symantec company for a while, and I think there was another company that had it before Symantec bought them. Anyway, Ghost does a bit-for-bit copy of just about anything, but it was, or is, I don't even know if it's still around, not open source. It was proprietary. There was a version developed back in the early 2000s for Linux called Ghost for Linux, and then they changed the name to G4L, the letter G, the number 4, and the letter L. I haven't used it maybe once, but it was a bit funky when I used it, if I recall correctly, and didn't really meet my needs. I see that it's still being maintained. We'll have a link in the show notes to G4L. But of the applications that we're talking about here, it's not in the repositories, at least for Ubuntu Mate and for, I would expect, Ubuntu or any of the Debian derivatives. So that leads me to believe that perhaps it may not be as either well-maintained or as good as some of these others. I could be completely wrong because, as I said, I haven't used it. Have you, Bill, used G4L?
I haven't used G4L, but I've used the original Ghost in Windows.
Yeah, yeah, so have I. And it worked quite well.
Yeah, it did. It was almost like the go-to for the longest time. And
oh, yeah.
I actually used it to clone a whole drive, and it worked really, really well. But I have not tried it since it's been renamed G4L on Linux. Of course, my data retention policies are questionable, so take that with a grain of salt. I like the nuke and pave, but now that you mention it, I should really be a little bit better than I am about actually having a whole cloned drive. It might have made my Linux adventures a little more easier to work around.
Yeah.
But hindsight's 2020, and apparently I have 3,000, slash 3,000 vision during normal times. So, oh well, I can't see the forest for the trees, as they say.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we're going to talk about the remaining four, as I said, in a little bit more detail. And the information that we're going to provide here comes from a recent article by Christian Colley on the Make Use Of website. We'll have a link to his article as well on these four software applications. And rather than reinvent the wheel, we'll review those four applications as they appear in that article. We'll add our comments and give you our opinions, because we believe that these are probably the four, if not most popular, certainly the four most familiar to folks in Linux, and ones that I think I will be testing out, because I have used only really one of these in any depth, and that's CloneZilla. We've done episodes on CloneZilla. I have an article on our website on CloneZilla, and it's really probably the most popular. So let's dig in now to the four. Let's start with number one from the article.
Number one is DD. It is the native Linux cloning tool, and I've not had any experience with it, so I'm going to rely pretty heavily on what was written. I do know it is command line only, isn't it, Larry?
Yeah, it's command line, and I've used it a little bit for creating bootable USB sticks.
Oh, okay.
That kind of thing. It's a great tool for that, but as Christian says in his article, you've got to be a little careful with DD.
Well, I definitely don't want to touch it. But as usual, it's probably the most powerful Linux tool of all of them that we'll be reviewing.
Mm-hmm.
DD sometimes referred to us as Disk Destroyer, can clone an entire hard drive or disk partition to another. But if misused, it can delete the contents of your disk. And that means Bill's not touching this one.
Yeah.
I can do that by myself. I don't need a program to help me.
Yeah, I think, you know, if I take this one on, I'm going to try it on some other disks first, you know.
Don't use it on the daily driver.
Yeah. And what I might do is create a script to run it for backups. You know, test it out on a
that
hard drive.
Could not possibly go wrong.
No,
there.
And just check to make sure everything works. Write a script, and that way I'm sure I don't miss anything in the command. You know?
Yeah. Okay. You should use this one with extreme care.
Yeah.
Warnings have been posted. Okay. Disclaimers are out of the way. Use this at your own risk and with extreme care. It sounds sort of like fragile eggs almost.
Yeah, but it's very powerful.
Yes, it's very powerful. That's the problem. You'll find DD built into most Linux operating systems. If not, you can install it from the package manager to clone your computer's hard drive. Use the command, and I'm going to spell this out, but it's also in the show notes. It's DD IF --/ dev /SDX OF --/ dev /SDY --BS --64K CONV --NCERROR or error comma sync. So if you didn't get it all, it's in the show notes and I'm looking at it and I'm going, oh,
yeah.
That's something I don't want to type because I'll mix up the two drives, you know, X and Y.
Right.
And I guess that would be like the first one would be your source drive and the second one would be your target drive. Is that the correct way?
Yeah,
of reading it?
Yeah. So if your hard drive on your computer is SDA and you're copying it to a USB connected hard drive that shows up as SDD, let's say. So the command would be IF --dev/SDA and then OF --dev/SDD. Yeah.
Okay.
So that's the way I read it. And take that again with a grain of caution.
and then the BS is the bit size?
Yeah. So blocks,
byte size.
Block size. Yeah.
Block size.
Yeah.
Okay.
And,
that makes sense. 64K.
Yeah. Yeah. And according to the article, the default in this program is 512 bytes,
uh-huh.
which is really small. So you want to make sure that you make it 64K or larger. And that will help with making the transfer of the backup a lot more quick.
Okay. So just to kind of reiterate what we just said, here SDX is the source disk, while SDY is the destination. And the X or Y would be like SDA or SDB, whatever the drives are called on your system.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on how many drives you have, you'll just need to make sure you have the one that corresponds to what you're trying to clone. And 64 corresponds to the block size command. And the default, like we said, is 512 bytes, which is very small. So it's best to include a 64K or larger, like 128K, as a condition. However, while a larger block size makes transfers quicker, a smaller block size makes the transfer more reliable. So you kind of have to play with, you know, what is it, speed versus reliability.
Yep. Yeah, there's a balance.
And so if you only want to clone a partition on your device, you can go ahead and use the 64K. As you see, the partition in SDA1, that is a partition 1 on device SDA, will be cloned to SDB1, a newly created partition, on the device SDB. So in this instance, and it's all in the show notes, so you know, I'm not going to read that thing out because everybody's like, why does he do that? you're telling just to clone a partition. So it's going to take that partition and basically the exact copy goes to the other hard drive. How long it takes will depend on the size of the disk or partition. Just make sure that the destination biome is large enough to store it.
Yeah. So you don't want to take a, you know, 120 gigabyte hard drive and copy it over to a 60 gigabyte backup drive. It's not going to work.
That might cause problems.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So what DD is doing is making a byte for byte copy and putting it onto a new hard drive.
Right. And you can do the whole drive or you can do just a partition if you want
just
to.
Just a partition. Yeah. So it is very flexible and it's all command line. And if you look at the commands, if you're careful, you should be okay.
Yeah.
But if you're not comfortable with the command line, you might want to, either take it very slowly or maybe just avoid this one until you get a little more confident.
Right. Exactly. Okay, and let's see. Part image is our next one, and it's a partition backup tool, of course. So if you're a little cautious with DD, or you just prefer to not take the risk of deleting things accidentally, part image is something that you might be able to use for most of the distributions because it kind of protects you from the disk destroyer kind of thing that DD gives you. One word of caution, though, is this partition image application is not going to be something you can use if you're using Ubuntu or Ubuntu Mate with its default ext4 file system. I anticipate any of the Ubuntu derivatives are going to use ext4 file system by default, and maybe even Debian and most of the Debian distributions as well, unless those distributions have changed the default as part of their installation. And the reason is PartImage doesn't support ext4.
That's weird.
Yeah, well, it's kind of old. It does allow you to, as DD does, clone any sort of disk like a Windows formatted disk, FAT32 or NTFS. Mm-hmm. Although those are considered experimental in PartImage, it will do them, and it will back up anything with ext3 or older Linux file systems. So you won't be able to use it on the more modern ones. And Christian recommends that before starting, you ensure that the partition you want to clone is unmounted. So use the unmount command or right-click on the mounted drive and choose unmount or disconnect or whatever your command says. Now, if you are cloning the main drive in the computer that you use, this means that you'll need to boot from some other device in order to clone that drive. So you might want to use a live CD or a live USB stick, or perhaps even just a bootable USB stick with part image on it. And there are some sticks that you can get, like Rescue USB sticks and things like that, that have part image on them already. So you can take a look around for those kind of things. So those are the cautions there. Not ext4, and you want to run it from some other device if you're trying to clone the main drive on the computer that you normally use. So I think if you take those two things in mind, you can probably proceed. So if you need to install a part image and it's not installed by default, at least on my Ubuntu Mate, you want to use a command like sudo apt-get install part image. It's in the Ubuntu repository, so you should be able to find it, and it'll be in most Linux distributions repositories. It's pretty easy to use. And although it is command line based, so it runs in a terminal, you can use your mouse with it. in the command line to click around and actually have it work, according to what Christian says. I've never used it, so I'll take his word for it. You can, of course, use the command line, but you can use function keys like F6 and F5 and use your cursor to tap around. But since it works with a mouse, why not?
Yeah, okay. Well, for a more mature alternative, you shouldn't give me this one. The more mature version of this? Okay.
Well, more mature in this case, I think, means a little more well-supported. This one supports EXT4, right?
Oh, okay. Well, then it is more mature then.
Yeah, so what is this one?
This one is called Part Clone. So it's an alternative to DD that supports backups of the XT4 file system. ParClone is simple to use,
yay,
but again requires text commands rather than a keyboard or mouse-driven interface. You can install it with sudo apt-get install ParClone and launch with ParClone and then a dot and then the file system you want to clone.
So if you're cloning ext4, it would be partclone.ext4 space and then the rest of the command.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So, these command lines. I'm doing these things, man. I tell you, I can mess up a command line in a heartbeat. The following command will create a disk image of HDA1 hard disk drive 1 partition 1 called HDA1.image or IMG, and part clone ext3-c-d-$dev/hda1 minus or dash 0 HDA1.image. And if you didn't catch all that, there won't be a test, but you can find it in the show notes.
Yeah. And I would very much recommend you not try to follow along with what Bill is reading off the screen. Just go to our show notes. In fact, click on the article from Christian.
Yeah. Just do that. I can see it now, the mail saying, I followed your exact reading of that, and you done messed up my hard drive. So, okay, so disclaimer, don't listen to how I read it. I'm mentally challenged as it is with the command line, so you've been warned. And you can actually find more details on this usage at the Part Clone website, and we would recommend you do that and not listen to me.
Yeah, read about it.
Read about it. Don't take your data's life in my hands. Would not be a very good thing. You might want to restore that image so you can use the command that Part Clone accepts, and you can find details on that usage also on their Part Clone website, which I highly recommend.
Yeah, and it's also in that article from Christian Colley on make use of. So either way, you can check that out.
Yeah, definitely check it out.
Yeah. Okay, our last utility here for making clones of or images of your hard drive is something called Clonezilla, very popular, and as described in the article, a popular disaster recovery solution, and all of these could be considered disaster recovery solutions, and Clonezilla is the one that both Bill and I have used in the past. It works extremely well. It is also command line driven and is very reliable, but it takes a little bit to get your head wrapped around it, as do the others from reading about them. But let's continue on and describe it a little bit, and we'll have a link to our article on Clonezilla in the show notes. So if you want to read a little bit about how it works, you can do that there, or install Clonezilla from your repositories and try it out. So Clonezilla gives you a little bit more flexible solution than the others. It is based on Part Clone, and it's suitable for a wide range of cloning discs. So one of the things that I was thinking is in trying these out, the ones that I would like to try that I haven't tried before are part clone and maybe DD, a little risky there. But Clonezilla, now that I read that it's based on part clone, maybe I'll just stick with it because I know how to use it. Anyway, it supports all of the file systems that you would expect across Linux and Windows and Mac OS. And unlike DD and part clone, it's available as its own bootable ISO. So you can burn it to a DVD. It's a little big to fit on a CD. But if you still...
I've used it like that.
Yeah, if you still have CDs. or you can write it to a USB stick, and I've used it both ways, from a DVD and from a USB stick. It's fairly straightforward to use, and it's keyboard-driven menus rather than menus that you can use with your mouse, but it is menu-driven in the terminal, so it's pretty easy for you to grasp what it is you're doing. You can, according to the article, use it in a professional capacity to quickly image multiple smaller PC setups with the same operating system. And this is the way I used to use Ghost, is when I was supporting multiple users, setting up computers for them. I would have a generic hard drive image, Ghost it onto the new image, and then set that up for each individual user from there. Saved a lot of time, a lot of work. And Clonezilla is something you can use in a similar sort of way. So although you want to sync your basic information to the cloud or make file-based backups using the backup tool that comes with your distribution, having a complete image that you can quickly restore to your hard drive, or you can swap out the disks, makes it much easier and quicker to get back up and running in case you have a disaster with your hard drive, or your hard drive fails, or something like that. So using any of these utilities is a good way to accomplish that. And I think in terms of our recommendation, Bill, from least complicated and easiest to understand to most risky would be Clonezilla as number one. And then part clone, because Clonezilla is based on it. And the key there is with part clone, you're dealing with commands on the command line rather than menu driven. Then maybe part image if you don't have ext4 file system, and then DD if you really want to.
I wouldn't put that as number three, just because it almost everything uses the ext4 file system now.
Okay.
So I'd have to say just put DD as number three and part image as number four, just for the fact you might not know it doesn't support it, and you're pretty much broke system because it doesn't work.
You wouldn't break your system, you'd break your backup, but so anyway, that's I'm okay with that, Bill. I still maybe we'll agree to disagree. I still think maybe part image is number three, and with the caution that if you're using an ext4 file system, you're not going to be able to use it.
Now, before we get off this episode, I do want to point out that we are not using Skype this week.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
And we didn't have any problems.
Who knew it would work? Yes, no problems at all. It was smooth. It was great to be able to hear your voice nice and clear. No dropouts.
Crazy.
Yeah, no funky, hey, we've got to restart Skype because it just forced us into an update. Thank you, Microsoft. There's no, hey, we've got to restart Skype because I can hear you, but you can't hear me, and who knows why. none of that.
So another interesting fact about the program we're using, it uses Opus.
Yeah.
So it's open source.
Yes, open source. And if you haven't been listening to the past couple of episodes, the utility that we're using is something called Discord. D-I-S-C-O-R-D. Can you describe Discord for our listeners who aren't familiar with it, Bill?
Yeah, Discord it's free. It's available for Windows, Mac, and Linux. I know it's available. I don't know. I haven't seen an RPM version, but I know it does have a deb because you installed the deb version on your machine.
Mm-hmm.
And what you do is you sign up for a free account. This sounds sort of like how things work at Microsoft, only there's no real telephone interaction. It's more of a TeamSpeak type of service, but you can have private calls. You can do texting. So if Larry wants to send me some information, a quick text to say, "Hey, you moron, you messed that whole thing up again," you know, he can without having to say it. You can send files back and forth. And so it's been working really, really well. Most of the time, it's used by guilds that play online games. Uh-huh. And my guild uses it. That's how I come to find out about it. And after using it, I say, "Hey, Larry, we should use this. It's better than Skype."
Yep.
So we've been testing it on and off for a couple weeks, and it's just been rock solid. And I have no real complaints. It's pretty intuitive. So if you were rating this this program from 1 to 5, 5 being the best to 1, what would you give it, Larry?
5 being the best, I would give it a 5.
Really?
On a bad day, I'd give it a 4.5. but no, this is great because it's open source. It works. Two critical aspects of using programs on Linux. And the third thing is it's easy and simple to understand and get installed and just use because it does what you need it to do. It's very nicely organized and it works if you're familiar with any voice calling application. You'll understand Discord as soon as you open up. You'll understand how to use it.
And they also have a mobile versions that you can add to your Android or iPhone.
Oh yeah, even nicer. Yeah,
it's pretty handy. And so it's been working really well, and we were both absolutely thrilled to actually give it a production test, and it hasn't let us down yet. Okay, I've now jinxed us, so we should get off this really quick.
No, I think it's going to hang in there for us, yeah. Bill. Just a word of note, I noticed on Ubuntu Mate that at least in the 17.04 release of Ubuntu Mate, it's in the distributions software repositories, and I first installed it from there, but I noticed there's a little bit of a hiccup in the user interface when it's sitting in the system tray and you right click on it. System tray, I shouldn't use Windows terms. When it's sitting in the upper panel and you right click on it, the context menu does not match whatever theme you've got. It kind of defaults to the default theme. Now, if I go to the Discord website, and we'll have a link to that in the show notes, and download the deb package from there and install it, it works perfectly. So there's something funky with the version that is in the 17.04 repositories for Ubuntu Mate, at least. I can't say anything for any other distribution because I haven't tried it on any others. But if you go to the website and download the package from there, you should be fine. And we'll, like I said, we'll have a link in the show notes to the website, discordapp.com.
Cool.
There you go. And thanks for that suggestion, Bill. And thanks. I don't remember which of our listeners also suggested that, but thanks to them as well, because it's turned out to be really great.
Well, I should actually give a shout out to my guild leader who actually said, "Hey, why aren't you using this?" But it's worked out really well, so I'm pretty pleased with it.
Yep. Our next episode will be listener feedback. Until then, you can go to our website at goinglinux.com for articles and show notes, as well as links to download and subscribe. We are the website for computer users who just want to use Linux to get things done.
And if you'd like, you can participate directly with our friendly and helpful community members by joining the discussion in our Going Linux podcast Google Plus community.
Until next time, thanks for listening.
73.
Theme music provided by Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com.